The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Tuesday, April 30th, 2024. Yes, it is the final day of April. Can you believe it? Seems like just yesterday we were talking about SEC regular season basketball. We had the SEC tournament. March Madness has come and gone. I mean, April has flown by. And with May coming up, it's starting to get a little hotter outside. Summer's right around the corner here on the plains. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. It's a busy show today, as it is every single Tuesday. Coming up in hour number two, in that 3 o'clock hour, right around 3:15, we'll have Double D, the man himself, Daryl Dappertz, will join us on the phone lines. Excited to talk to him about all things Auburn athletics, football updates through the transfer portal, basketball updates through the transfer portal, and of course, we'll talk a little Auburn baseball as well. But as we've been doing in the spring and into the summer here on the show the last couple of years, Tuesdays in hour number one have become our baseball power hours, with our good friend Lindsey Crosby joining us in the studio with all of the outlets and sites and podcasts and writings and everything that he's on nowadays. Lindsey, great to have you in the studio again, brother. How are you?
Always great to be here. Always enjoy. I'm in a new seat. It threw me off a little bit. We moved the studio around a little bit.
Yeah, intern Allen has graduated and gone, so I'm now over on this side. Yeah, congrats to intern Allen. But yeah, I'm over here running the board and the phones and doing everything now. So now we're across from each other.
I can actually see you now. Like, I was looking out the window last time.
Yeah.
Which, it's a lovely day. It's baseball weather, if you will.
It is. It is baseball weather. Well, there are so many things in the world of baseball to talk about, and a lot of it today is going to be on the professional side of things with the Atlanta Braves and lots of storylines around Major League Baseball. We will get into Auburn baseball near the end of the hour today, just because, I mean, we all kind of know what that status is. So
they're also off today. They don't play a midweek this week.
Exactly.
Which is odd.
Right, because of finals week, right?
Yeah.
Yep, because of finals week over at the university. So not as much to talk about there.
Now, what's cool about that, though, is the coaches always talk about once school is out, they have more access to the players. And they said it really kind of gives us the ability towards the end of the season to kind of do like a minor league baseball feel, where every day is just about ball. And you wake up working on baseball, you go to bed working on baseball, you don't have classes, you don't have other obligations. And so it's an exciting time for them, but they just have no time this week while the kids are in finals, mm-hmm. and then they'll play a series this weekend against Ole Miss.
Yeah, and that's got to be exciting for the players to kind of get that true, almost going back to summer league ball type of play where you just, you go to bed, you get up, eat breakfast, go work out, go practice, play a game, batting. I mean, whatever the case may be, it's just baseball the time you wake up from the time you go to bed.
You're getting to play almost every day, and that's ultimately, baseball players want to play baseball. Like, that's their goal. That's
believe
what they
it or
want
not.
To do. Believe it or
yeah.
not. Hot take here, but they want to play baseball, and that's, you know, minor league baseball, obviously full swing. The complex league starts up next week, and so that's all of the, you know, the 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids learning to be professional ball players for the first time. So it's an exciting time in the world of baseball right now.
Well, let's talk some professional baseball. We'll start with the Atlanta Braves, as we always do. And you and I were talking before we came on the air. Unfortunately, this is a long couple of days for folks like you who cover the Atlanta Braves, talk about the Atlanta Braves, because when they go out west, you got to stay up a little bit later. And that's what happened last night with Atlanta.
I've been having a cup of coffee with dinner every day because you know, the game start at 9:40 Eastern out in Seattle right now. I think there's a game this either Friday or Saturday against the Dodgers at 10:10 Eastern time start. And so it's brutal.
That's miserable, man.
Especially when you're getting up with kids and all that in the morning. And then to be up and sit through a loss the way that Atlanta lost is kind of doubly frustrating, because amazing game last night as far as what the starting pitching was able to do, what the defense was able to do, And Max Fried takes a no-hitter deep into the game, ends up going, I believe it was six innings, no runs on like two hits. He gets the loss because the Mariners walk it off against the bullpen in the ninth.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. And that's one of those baseball stats and one of those baseball things where it's like, man, you had a guy who pitched so well and came out at the end, and then the guy behind him is the one that gave it up, and you get the loss for it.
Yeah, and what made it tough, too, is like having the access to the players that we do and being able to like hear them talk about, like, I hate it for Max. Like, I mean, he had a no-hitter through like seven innings, and like we lost the game, and it's because of me. Like, it's so hard to hear these guys talk about it.
Mm.
But at the same time, you feel good about 9 times out of 10, you probably win that game.
Yeah.
And it's something baseball, I think, is more so than a lot of other sports, is the influence of the luck, but how you also know it can balance out. Like a football game, like a football season, a professional season, 16 games, 17 games, whatever it is now, like you don't have an opportunity for the luck to balance out.
Right.
And in baseball, you can take a bad beat like this where you go seven shutout innings. His streak now is 16 because he had 9 shutout innings against in that no-hitter last week.
Mm.
So he had Max Fried has 16 scoreless innings right now. And the Braves are 1-1 in those games. Gosh. It's like this, that will even out over time.
It will.
But like that's what's great about baseball is, yes, this sucked, but like it's gonna fix itself if you wait long enough and you have enough time to wait. Whereas college baseball, professional football, all that stuff, you don't have time to wait.
Yeah, and so Atlanta loses the series opener last night against Seattle, out in Seattle. And as you mentioned, yes, they'll take that after the Tuesday-Wednesday games. They'll go to Los Angeles. They'll take on the Dodgers. They've got some big games coming up. The Dodgers, they've got the Red Sox, they got the Mets. I mean, they've got some bigger games coming up due the Atlanta Braves. And, hey, phone lines are open here in hour number one with Lindsay with us. And if you have any baseball comments, questions, concerns, anything on your mind, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And you know what's wild about the game tonight, Lindsay? Atlanta in Seattle on this Tuesday at 8:40 Central start time. Tonight's a big game for the Braves because if they lose, this would be, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, this would be the first series loss of the season.
You are technically correct because the 4-game series against the Mets had a game pushed to September. So the Braves are down 2-1 in that series, but the season won't wrap, or the series won't wrap until September because of the postponed game. So as of right now, they have not lost a series, with the caveat of that series is not yet done. Whereas you have other teams like the Marlins who haven't won a series yet.
Oh, miserable. Well, for the Braves, too, I was looking at the White Sox series at the beginning of April where they split game 1 and 2, and then the third game was postponed. So you're still waiting on that series to wrap up as well.
Exactly. Like, you haven't lost a series yet, with the caveat of two of them are not finished. One's tied and one you're losing in.
Yes.
But, yeah, it's a good place to be. And when you kind of zoom out at this Atlanta Falcons team, you have your big three hitters of Matt Olson, Austin Riley, Ronald Acuna Jr.
Mm-hmm.
are not really producing either power-wise or just batting average-wise like you expect, power production-wise like you expect. You have that. You lost Spencer Strider for the whole year. You've been without your all-star catcher, Sean Murphy, since game one. You lost Ozzie Albies for a 10-day stretch in there. Max Fried had 2 disastrous starts to begin the year, and you still have the best record in baseball. Like, it's one of those things where imagine what this offense would do, what this team would do if all those things were going right.
Right.
And it's a testament to the depth of the organization that you're at this point. But I'm going to be honest, mentioning the home runs, I'm starting to believe the conspiracy theory that somebody messed with the balls, that baseball messed with the balls again.
Why is that?
Have you seen some of the stats about production this month versus last year?
The month of April?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so somebody who covers the Braves that I know, we sit in the press box together, he did the dive this morning and pulled a lot of these numbers. So last year, you had... for the month of April, you had one team that hit more than 50 homers, you had 4 that hit 40, you had 10 teams that hit 35 homers, and 18 teams that hit 30.
Okay.
Okay? In the month of April last year.
Mm-hmm.
Month of April this year, nobody's hit 50. No club, no team's hit 50. One team has hit 40 as compared to 4. One team has hit 35 as compared to 10 last year, And eight teams have hit only 30 as compared to 18 last year. And it's like, why, with weather and everything being roughly the same, why would home run production be so significantly down?
League-wide.
League-wide to everybody compared to previous years. Batting average on base for teams year over year are roughly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Slugging's down 30 points.
Wow.
And then when you look at the expected slugging versus the actual slugging, the expected slugging is you put in how hard the ball was hit, how far it went, the angle it went at, and they tell you this is normally on balls like that.
Right.
This is the stats you should get. That's the expected stats. The difference in expected stats and actual stats are 25 points. I'm sorry, expected slugging and actual slugging.
Mm-hmm.
So every power measurement, both real and what it should be across the board, are down, and nothing's changed except for maybe the thing that MLB is on the record as having changed in the past, the baseballs.
Hmm. And I mean, is this something that is going around major league circles right now, Lindsay? I mean, is this something that they're starting to legitimately be concerned about, players and managers and administrators? Like, are they really starting to worry that the major league baseball has done something to the physical baseballs themselves?
So no player has gone on the record. But,
well, they'd probably be fined if they did.
Yeah, but numerous people in baseball, in front offices, both in background as well as off the record with reporters and things, have asked questions about if the reporters knew anything about the baseballs being changed. Because the last time we figured this out, it was some reporters. They got some actual game-used balls. They bought game-used balls and had them taken apart and studied by a physicist, like literally to figure out all this out.
Journalism.
And they figured out that the balls had been changed. And they figured fantastic. Out when the balls were changed. And that's it feels like we're going to have to do that again, which is kind of annoying that we can't trust Major League Baseball to not change the most basic part of the game.
The most important part of the game?
The most important part of the game.
Yeah.
The actual baseball itself. I mean, the uniform fiasco is another example of like a thing that they just changed to change. They didn't have to change it. And the game is worse for it. I feel like the baseballs are kind of in the same way.
But don't worry, they'll change those uniforms back in 2025 instead of doing it right now. I mean, they'll wait, you know, because that's what Major League Baseball does.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the Braves have 3 home runs in their last 7 games.
That's not normal.
That's not normal, no. For a team that tied the Major League record all time with 307 last year and brought back 8 of their top 10 position players, it feels like that should not be that big of a difference.
Yeah, you would think, I mean, with just if it was a one team or a couple of teams, like you would think, okay, like maybe they're just not, I mean, you know, it's not going to be the same numbers each and every month of each and every year. Like it's not a mirror, but league-wide across the entirety of Major League Baseball, like, and it with it being that drastic too of the hard power hitting numbers. Seems like you were saying what? Regular hits, singles, doubles, all that type of thing. Those are
batting average, on base, those are all exactly right, roughly where they were last year. Yeah.
And so I would assume.
Just slugging.
That's so crazy. So I would assume that would mean there's been more, I guess, a higher percentage of flyouts and deep fly balls and stuff like that. I mean, if they're just not carrying as far.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and when you watch games, it's very evident. Even the broadcasters, and I think that's a great tell, you know, and something that you can appreciate is like over time, you learn off the bat, that's a homer. Like, that's gone, or that's probably going to be gone.
Right.
And you can hear them get excited, get fiery, and then that ball's barely making it to the warning track.
That's the
like,
worst.
What is. It's like he got, it's a deep fly ball to left, and it's, you know, it's caught at the
and
the
it's
track.
Caught at the grass.
Yeah. It's not even on the track. It's caught at the grass.
Yeah.
And it's like, what are we doing here?
That's crazy.
That's one of the big things there.
Interesting. Well, some more baseball stats and some more baseball storylines that I want to talk about, some more Braves, and the fact that when you go to ESPN, just listen to this, folks. When you go to ESPN and you pull up the stats of the Atlanta Braves, offensively, the team leaders, batting average, Marcell Ozuna. Home runs, Marcell Ozuna. RBIs, Marcell Ozuna. OBP, Marcell Ozuna. Hits, Marcell Ozuna.
Runs, Ronald Acuna.
Yeah.
But like, Marcell's everything else. Yeah.
That's so wild. And I know we talked about this last week, but week to week as we have you on, I mean, yes, it takes a while for the numbers to fluctuate and for people to move spaces, but man, Marcell Ozuna's doing it all offensively for Atlanta.
He has been by far the best performer. I mean, he's the MVP of the first month, and it's either him or Ronaldo Lopez, two guys who you did not expect to be your MVPs after the first month, right?
That's like, so crazy.
You did not see that coming, but that is where we are, and the fact that he's doing that as a designated hitter, he's getting four pinch hits a day, and he's doing that, is wild. Now, when you kind of dig into some of the stuff, he is slowing down a little bit. It's still a 1. OPS, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it was 1170, and now he's down to 1056.
Wow,
you know,
he's terrible.
Batting average down from 373 to 330, something where I think he's been held hitless three times in the last week, which he had by one of those days entering last week.
Yeah.
So now some of those other ones, he still went. He went 2-for-3 in one. He went 1-for-4 in the other one. But like, you have to start figuring out these other guys because he's not going to keep it up forever, right? I mean, he kept it up most of the year last year when he finally figured it out, but probably not going to keep it up all year. And the more I think about this, the more I think it might be the baseballs, actually.
Could be.
Because I'm thinking about now the correlation between Ronald Acuña Jr. struggling with fastballs so much.
Yeah.
And when you change the baseball, one of the things that's impacted the most is the fastball, because it doesn't have extra movement you've put on it.
Hmm.
It's going, for the most part, unless you're throwing a cutter or a sinker, it's going straight. And so any changes to the ball will naturally mess with that, I think, most perceptibly. If you change the baseball and your curveball breaks an extra inch, who's going to notice? It's breaking 65 inches already.
Yeah.
But your fastball that has, 17 inches of induced vertical break, all of a sudden it's got 19. That's a more significant difference.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that could explain something. There might be a story here.
Hey, we've got our tinfoil hats on here in the studio. We're about to break some news and take down Major League Baseball on ESPN 106.7 in Auburn, Opelika. Bet you didn't know that was going to happen today. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to us. We're talking all things baseball with Lindsey Crosby here in hour number one. We'll continue talking Braves, Major League. Get to some Auburn baseball as well after this here on ESPN 106.7.
Owned and operated by Auburn alumni Andy Senton, the Palms Pet Resort at 203 East University Drive near campus is your furry friend's home away from home. Offering boarding, pet daycare, and in-house grooming, your pet will love the Palms' 10,000-square-foot facility, enormous 15,000-square-foot outdoor play space, artificial turf for comfort, play structures, and outdoor covered space. Contact them today at pawms.com. The Palms, your furry friend's home away from home.
Folks, buying a home or property can be the biggest investment of your life. Making sure you have a clear title and the closing go as smoothly as possible is as important to the Wisdom Firm LLC as it is to you. The Wisdom Firm's licensed to close any property purchase in the entire state of Alabama. With offices on Big Creek Drive in Auburn and Highway 49 South at beautiful Lake Martin, the Wisdom Firm has you covered. Give Travis and his team a call at 826-0722 or check them out at auburnlegal.com for all of your real estate closing needs. The next time you purchase real estate, tell your lender or agent, close us at the Wisdom Firm. The representation is made by the quality of legal services is greater than the quality of legal services made by other attorneys.
Getting quality employees to fill positions in your company is essential, but finding those people can be a major hassle, unless you use ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality people a breeze, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. With ZipRecruiter, one click sends your job to hundreds of top job sites. But more than that, ZipRecruiter's advanced technology identifies the candidates with the skills you need, sends you a list of great matches to review, then actively invites them to apply for your job. And the results speak for themselves. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. That's right, the first day. Now you can focus on your business and let ZipRecruiter do the work finding the best people for you. See for yourself. Experience the ease, efficiency, and power of ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Pythodge Custom Homes and Renovation, East Alabama's classic home builder. A woman-owned business founded in 2014, Mary and Ken Pilant founded Pythodge to maintain community charm while restoring classic homes in Auburn, Opelika. Whether it is a bathroom kitchen retrofit or that start-from-scratch custom build, no job or dream is too big or small for Pythodge. Now offering land management services through its sister company, Dirtworks LLC. Give them a call at 334-748-9699. Pythodge, East Alabama's classic home builder.
Since 1997, River City Door has helped take the guesswork out of the garage door process. Maintaining a reputation as the region's premier garage door company, River City Door provides detailed installations with their highly certified technicians. Serving the I-85 corridor, River City Door offers both residential plus commercial garage door installs and repair. Design your door today at rivercitydoor.com or stop by the new showroom at 300 North Dean Road, Suite 4 in Auburn. River City Door, proudly serving West Georgia and East Alabama.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back inside the studio here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you all being with us on this Tuesday edition of On the Line. I'm Jacob Goins. We're joined by Lindsey Crosby for all of hour number one, talking all things baseball. Plug everything you got, man. Tell people where they can find you on all your 15,000 outlets.
So I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. It's the hub for everything. Most of my writing is BravesToday.com, covering the Atlanta Braves. I do also Auburn Daily, covering the Auburn Tigers. That's almost entirely baseball there. The Marlins as well, inside the Marlins.com. But that Twitter account's the key to everything because sometimes I'll hop on and write for somebody else, and that link comes on there as well. Twitter.com/CrosbyBaseball.
Can we please, 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 please talk about the state of umpires in Major League Baseball? I'm not joking. I think it's as bad as I've ever seen it. It's every day I'm seeing a new video on Twitter X somewhere of not just Angel Hernandez, he's not great either, but just every single day, there's a new video of a horrific call in Major League Baseball.
Last week, we even talked about this because there was Aaron Boone getting thrown out for a fan yelling. The thing about umpiring is like, and two things can be true at once. Daryl's coming on next hour. He loves to say that. It's two things can be true at once.
Mm-hmm.
Umpiring as a whole, like generally, is as good as it's ever been as far as the day-to-day, game-to-game, pitch-to-pitch consistency as measured by like Umpire Auditor and some of the other accounts and websites devoted to this. On average, the accuracy is good. But the mistakes have been more and more egregious. And I think because we're all, we've seen so many of them recently, we're watching for more. It's that like survivorship bias kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also because they've been so egregious that it's becoming a huge story because it's changing games. I mean, Wyatt Langford,
literally
Juan Soto, both of them struck out in at-bats, like six pitch at-bats, where not a single pitch was in the strike zone as measured by automated balls and strike systems and StatCast and all of the advanced technology we have. And there's an unspoken part of this that we haven't really addressed. And I think because some people are a little worried they're going to come off as like bad people for doing this. There is a significant and observed difference in the overall accuracy as well as the how small the mistakes are, how big the mistakes are,
mm-hmm,
for umpires above and below a certain age. There
okay.
is a, and if you think about it, it makes sense because you have, you know, 20 and 30-year-old athletes, some of the best athletes in the world, throwing a baseball 98 miles an hour, 60 feet and 6 inches, and you're asking a 65-year-old man to see a fraction of an inch difference.
Yeah.
Like, when we've trained the catchers to try and fool you the best that they can. I've seen umpires call strikes on pitches that weren't caught. It was a pass ball or a foul tip or something, but the catcher did such a good job of framing it.
Yeah.
The umpire called it and then had to, like, wave it off when he realized the ball was back there. And there's an observed difference in age between the older umpires and the younger umpires.
Which, like you said, it makes sense. And not that it's, you know, not being, what is it, ageist? Is that how you'd say that? I don't know. But, you're dealing with some of the best athletes in the world, throwing mm-hmm. 95, 98, all sorts of movement type of plays. And then, not to mention the bang-bang plays at first base, at second base, at home plate. I mean, you're talking all these different situations where the human error continues to be highlighted. And I've seen people try to make the argument, and you may be in this category, our listeners may be in this category of, well, has it always been this way? We're just now seeing it magnified. And social media is, of course, as big as it's ever been. And so anything that happens in sports, you can find a picture and a video of it in about 5 seconds. But
Is that possibly it? I mean, has it always been this bad and this inconsistent and this impactful at times, and we're just now hearing about it on a bigger scale?
If you go back and you look at vintage videos of, like, Greg Maddux, I say vintage Greg Maddux, but, you know, Greg Maddux or older than that, the zones were so much bigger. And I think it's something where we have so many new ways to either judge or evaluate an umpire's performance that we didn't have before.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if it was 20-something years ago and you had an issue with a call that, Don Iasonia made, your options were, like, cut up a VHS and mail it to the league office. And now
we can
instantly see 4K video of exactly where the pitch was, as tracked by radar systems in the stadium,
yep,
and overlaid with a computer doing a 3D rendering of where it should have been. Like, we have so many better ways to look at it. On average, they're more accurate than they've ever been in baseball history, both balls and strikes and on the base paths. And on the base paths and things like that, fair foul, home runs or not home runs, we have the advantage of replay.
Yeah.
We can fix an issue. Now, if you screw up your replays and you don't have a replay left, and maybe you get hosed on something like that, but you have an option to fix it. Balls and strikes, there's nothing that we are allowed to do right now. But again, I'll remind people, we have a system in AAA that works right now. It can fix a mistake in 6 seconds. There's a built-in safety valve where it can't get abused, because if you have a certain number of challenges, when you lose a challenge, it's gone for the game. Mm. If you get it right, you keep being able to challenge. So as long as you're right, you can keep fixing mistakes.
It's almost like you get punished for being wrong.
Exactly. If you're wrong too many times, you run out of opportunities to challenge, even if one's obviously wrong later.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, we have a system that will fix this. And I think, barring that, there's some sort of system you can do where you evaluate and you don't rotate everybody through behind home plate. You don't have to let Angel Hernandez call balls and strikes anymore.
Historically bad for him, let me tell you.
He is generationally bad as far as he feels like an umpire from 50 years ago.
How does he still have a job? Because are they that desperate?
He has tenure, and all of their stuff with their job is collectively bargained, like the players are, like the coaches are. The difference is their collective bargaining agreement. I guarantee you next time it's up for renewal, this will not still be in there. They have more generous space on either side of the plate for to not be punished for a call than what we see on the websites and on Twitter and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They have, 2 inches or an inch and a half or an inch or whatever on the side and popping on down bottom. They can be wrong and not get punished for it.
Interesting. Well, for all of our baseball folks out there, if you're interested in this type of conversation, I highly recommend, if you're on X on social media, Twitter, go and follow Umpire Scorecards. It's at Ump Scorecards. That is a phenomenal account to follow. They literally tweet out an entire scorecard for every single Major League Baseball game with above expected relative accuracy, overall favor. They literally tell you how many more runs were given to a team based off of umpiring, and the numbers are wild. Go check that out at Ump Scorecards on Twitter. We're talking more baseball with Lindsey Crosby when we come back here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Stay tuned.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. We're joined by Lindsey Crosby with us in the studio, our baseball power hour, as we do on Tuesdays throughout the spring and into the summer. Man, what else is going on around Major League Baseball that people need to know about? There's always some sort of storyline, and the Major League Baseball is always messing something up. So what else is going on around the Major Leagues? It can be teams that we need to know about. It can be players, storylines. What's going on in Major League Baseball?
Your Boston Red Sox.
We're doing okay.
Surprising a lot of people.
Yeah.
I will admit, I had very low expectations for the Red Sox this year.
So did all of
us. The offseason was rough, right? Like it was not a great offseason.
Yeah.
And then some of the moves that you made, I'm thinking about signing Jack Flaherty. He had elbow surgery. He's out for the year. Trevor Story getting hurt again. Just not having a shortstop. Like that infield defense was not very good.
We found one though.
But you found one because you moved prospect Zidane Raphaela from center field to shortstop. And he was a really, really good defensive center fielder. He was back when I was doing the Prospect podcast, he was like one of the top five defensive center fielders in the minors, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really like his offense a lot. And by that, I didn't really think he had much of one. But he's played now, I think it's 9 games at short. You guys have won 6 of them. And he's batting like 250 with a 528 slugging at shortstop in those 9 games. He's hitting so much better as a shortstop than he did as a center fielder or when he'd kick into second base. That, speaking of Braves and talking about that, that also should be taken care of as of tonight. Vaughn Grissom, former Braves prospect, expected to be activated and will play tonight. He had a really good rehab stint. I want to say he batted like 400 on his rehab stint, which he really should do in AAA.
Yeah.
But also, first time playing all year.
So I say you're also rehabbing. So
yeah. So, I mean, it's just one of those, like, you get him back, Raphaela's brought some stability into shortstop, and then getting Raphaela out of the outfield has meant that it's a little easier to give playtime to Yoshida, because Matsutake Yoshida was a little bit frustrated by his usage. He thought he'd be playing more outfield versus DHing, and then his playtime got reduced because of the need to get other guys in the lineup. But with Raphaela out of center, with Tristan Casas hurt, having to use traded for Garrett Cooper from the Cubs, was the Marlins before that, former Auburn guy, Garrett Cooper. Because you traded for him, he's going to be at first base. And then Bobby Dalbec still has a job for some reason. I don't know why. Bobby Dalbec's awful. But it means that Yoshida can play a little bit more now. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of back to what he expected.
Yeah, well, here's what's exciting about because everybody wants to hear about my Boston Red Sox. Coming up Tuesday, May 7th and Wednesday, May 8th, so that is what, next week?
Yep.
The Red
Tuesday,
Sox,
Wednesday.
Yeah, the Red Sox are in Atlanta. And did you see who's pitching in that game?
I have not yet seen the pitching matchups for that game.
According to ESPN, the Atlanta Braves will be pitching the one and only Chris Sale.
Oh, that will be fun. I talked to Chris Sale right after he got traded to Atlanta. Like, it was they'd announced a contract extension. He hopped on a Zoom with us, with the media, from Florida, from the spring training facility. It's like an hour from his house.
Yeah.
And he talked a lot about leaving Boston and about, like, he felt like he let the people of Boston down. He let the organization down because of how often he was hurt and ineffective and things like that. But I know that, like, a lot of the Boston fans I know, and present company excluded, but a lot of the Boston fans I know have just kind of written the guy off as, like, he's always hurt. He's a bum. He's not going to play. And Chris Sale told us in that Zoom, this is the healthiest I have been in 4 years.
Mm.
It's the first time I've had a fully healthy, normal offseason since 2019.
Man, when he's healthy, he's one of the best in the game.
And he's had like 2 or 3 straight outings of 7 innings. I want to say all but one of his starts are quality starts.
Yeah.
He's looked really, really good, and it's brought a lot of stability to a Braves rotation.
Well, that's what he was doing when he was healthy in Boston. I mean, he could go 7 innings. That was almost the expectation for Chris Sale was, okay, you're going to get 7 innings out of him. He's going to have 9 or 10 strikeouts. He's going to give up maybe a run, and then you bring in the bullpen, and you just close it out. You bring in a close, and you're good to go, and the Red Sox are going to win on Sale Day. But, yeah, now he's in Atlanta, so that'll be exciting next Wednesday, Chris Sale pitching against his old ride, the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm curious how it goes, assuming there's no moves made to give guys breaks. The Braves have been really aggressive at giving extra rest to that rotation. Because Charlie Morton's 40, Chris Sale's been hurt a lot, Ronald Lopez is converting from relief to starting, so he pitched just over 60 innings the last 3 years. When he was a starter, 2019, I think, he's pitching 180 innings, but you can't make a jump of more than about 50 innings year over year, and so 110 is really his limit. They've been able to push him. He did a Tuesday start, a Tuesday start, a Tuesday start, a Wednesday start, and now he starts again on Wednesday tonight. They're able to give him about a week or so, which means Sale is, as of now, Tuesday. But if something changes, if they push a guy, if they call somebody up to give another day of rest, which they did that with Vines and Elder. They had Vines start on Sunday. They called up Elder after the game to start on Monday, pushed everybody back.
Mm-hmm.
If they do that again, he won't get the Red Sox. So I'm kind of curious there. I thought he'd get to face the White Sox in that the very beginning of the season.
Old ride.
Yeah, they used him in game 3 versus Philly instead of game 4 versus Chicago. I thought that was interesting. I think it was just a matchup then with Philly, really.
Man, isn't it crazy that we are a month into the season. Like, we're officially about over a month into Major League Baseball season. Everything got going on, what, March 28th? Is that right? I think so. Maybe the first day, 28th. Roughly. And so, over a month in now, or I guess a month into the season, I mean, is there a grade that you could give out? I mean, especially for the Braves in particular, but just for some teams that are maybe overperforming, underperforming, kind of as we look into this thing a month into the season.
What I love about getting a month in is now all your sample sizes for the most part are predictive now. You're not just kind of like, oh, he's only made two starts. You can't really. Most guys have four or five now.
Mm-hmm.
The Miami Marlins are awful. I knew they were going to be bad. I didn't know they're going to be 6-24 bad.
God, we have so bad.
We have a trio of three incredibly awful teams. I don't think we all realize this. Chicago White Sox 6-23. The Colorado Rockies are 7-21, and then Miami 6-24. And we've not had three teams with a 200 or I guess 250 for Colorado or worse losing percentage this late in the year that didn't fit like. That fixed it, right? Like, every team that's been this bad early
has stayed this bad. It's going to stay this bad, yeah.
And it's just, it blows my mind how bad they are. And then the Astros are right behind them. I mean, the Astros they've made, I think, six of the last seven ALCSs,
mm-hmm.
and they're 9-19 right now.
Yeah, if you told that to your average baseball fan, or even just the average sports fan, they never would have said, yeah, the Astros are bottom five in the league.
Now, at one point in time, they had five members of their rotation on the IL, and if you're not a super big baseball person, I'm one of them, you're still here. But two, your rotation is five guys.
Yeah.
So they had literally their entire rotation on the injured list.
That's brutal.
And they've gotten two of them back in Justin Verlander and Javier Valdez. But they're not hitting. They especially in with runners in scoring position and in clutch situations.
Mm-hmm.
They're not pitching well. Their bullpen has been a disaster. They spent $100 million on Josh Hader. And the back end of their bullpen has an ERA of like 6.5.
Gosh, that's horrible.
Well, this is the issue with free agency, right? They lost three guys who all threw 55 innings last year. And they replaced the three guys they lost who threw 55, 60 innings apiece.
Which is a lot.
Which is a lot, yes. For a reliever, that is a full season right there. They replaced those three guys with Josh Hader. That's it. One guy. He's one of the best closers in baseball, but he's one guy, and he's going to pitch 60 innings.
Yeah.
And then a lot of the guys that you count on to fill in the back end of your bullpen to give you two or three if a starter goes short, you've had to push them into the rotation
mm-hmm.
because you lost five starters. And so it's just, in retrospect, don't pay Hader $100 million. Go pay those three guys. Go pay those three relievers. Go sign some more starters. Do something. But now you're in the season already, and you're in a situation where you just need starters to come back so you can get your bullpen back to being respectable. And right now it's just not.
Yeah. And in that division, the AL East, seeing the Houston Astros at the bottom, the Mariners at the top, you got the Rangers up there. I mean, they're behind
AL West,
yeah. They're behind on the Angels, man. I mean, the Angels are bad.
They're behind Oakland. Oakland's third place. 13-17 in their division.
That shouldn't happen. That's a team that can't get fans to show up to the ballpark.
No, that is on purpose.
Yes,
it is. They have purposely driven their fans off. Their fans, there was a story just the other day about an Oakland A's fan who was traveling to every away game.
I saw that.
Yeah, like, they're not terrible. They just don't want to come give that guy money, and I get it. They just won a series against the Orioles. You know, they split a series with the Yankees. Like, yes, we thought they were bad, and they're not good, but, like, they won a series over the Nationals. Like, they won a series over the Rangers. They won a series over the Tigers. Like, they're not they're not as bad as they were last year. Now, can they keep it up? I don't know.
Yeah.
But they're not as bad as they were this year, as they were last year, and I'm surprised how good the Yankees have been. I honestly did not think the Yankees were going to be legitimate contenders this year, but they are 19-11. They are one game behind the Baltimore. No, sorry, they're actually tied with the Orioles because they have one more win but one more loss as well. So they're mm-hmm. tied with the Orioles for first place in the East. Plus 41 run differential is, I think, the third biggest in the American League. Like, I did not see this coming.
Yeah, behind the Royals at 42 and the Guardians at 46.
I knew something like that, yeah. So, like, I did not see the Yankees being this good.
Give it time, man. Give it time. Somebody will get hurt. They will blow it. They will go through the coldest home run streak you've ever seen in the history of Major League Baseball. The Yankees will blow it somehow.
That's right. He's a Red Sox fan. There you go. If you ever weren't sure, there you go.
I've seen it time and time again. Well, baseball in major leagues has been crazy. I mean, like you said, the Orioles are at the top of their division, the Guardians, the Mariners, of course, the Atlanta Braves are a game and a half above the Phillies. Are the Mets turning it around, possibly?
The big question I had for the Mets was the pitching. Kodai Senga being out with that shoulder issue, losing, you traded away Scherzer, Verlander, all those guys. But Luis Severino goes 8 innings last night. I believe the one run he gave up was in the 8th inning, the end of the 8th inning. Sean Manegas had some pretty good starts. Jose Quintana's been surprising. The pitching's been there. You dealt with some cold spells on offense. Francisco Lindor wasn't hitting his weight for a while. He hit 2 home runs in a game and had like 12 total bases last week. And since then, he's been hitting better. Nimmo's kind of getting back to speed. Alonso's in a contract year, and the average isn't there, but the homer production is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think for now, they're maintaining. I just don't see this rotation keeping it going all year because Manea mostly worked in relief last year. I think he threw 80 or something innings. Severino was hurt. Quintana was hurt. And so the workload concern, you can be good for a month. Anybody can be good for a month. Can they still be good in July and August? I don't quite think they're going to be there.
Well, I'm sure Braves fans are just so upset that the New York Mets are just an average team and probably can't hold on for the rest of the season. So Braves 19-8 on top of the National League East. When we come back, we'll take our final break. We will talk a little Auburn baseball as they get a win over the weekend in Baton Rouge. Not the series, but they did get a win. No midweek game. A huge opportunity this weekend for Butch and the boys. We'll talk about that as we wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. We're joined by Lindsey Crosby for the next couple of minutes. And I told you we'd talk a little Auburn baseball. We are definitely going to do that right now. And look, we've said it every week. It was not the season we wanted, and it's still a long way to go, it seems like. But Butch Thompson and Auburn baseball, they got a win last weekend. They got one on the road. Now, they didn't get the series win, but they at least got a win in the series finale against LSU. But again, Lindsey, this was another series for Auburn baseball where if you just do everything you're supposed to do and do it to the best of your ability, you probably win this series.
Yeah, and like, it was a winnable series. Like that was your problem. Saturday, 3-2. I believe it was a walk-off. Friday, 5-0. And then this game wasn't even as simple as it should have been because you put up 5 runs in the first inning. And then you let LSU start storming their way back.
Yep.
To the point of your winning pitcher was not the guy on the mound to start the game. Your winning pitcher was reliever John Armstrong. Like, it's one of those, I mean, you dropped a 5 spot at the very beginning, and then just slowly started giving it away over the course of the season, or the course of the game. Now, the things that I did take away kind of from watching, I'm not going to say that at a distance, I wasn't at LSU, but there was a Braves game that I was working that day, and mm-hmm. Some of the things that I took away is it's a lot of the youth that's coming through in these wins, like Chris Stanfield, center field, leading off for the first time all year, which I was saying do that from the beginning of the season. 3-for-5, right? Scores a run. Cade Bellew, local kid here. He's gotten in the lineup now. 3-for-4, 2 runs, 3 RBIs. Caden Green, who has more eligibility left. 2-for-4, 3 RBIs. Like, mm-hmm. You're getting Carter Wright playing because Ike Irish was injured. He goes 2-for-5, 2 runs, and an RBI. And it's one of those, the younger players. It's not the transfers you brought in, your Mason Mayners, who is the final year of eligibility. It's not mm-hmm. your Bobby Pierce, who's been hurt. It's not your Christian Hall, although he did go 1-for-4 with a run. It's a lot of the young guys. And I think last week we talked about the pitching finally started to come together and the offense had kind of disappeared. You're seeing some of these young players, now that they're getting comfortable being in the lineups every week and have gotten their feet underneath them, you're seeing them start to produce. Should give you some hope for the future. That combined with your guys like your Carson Myers, you know, taking your being your starter, replacing in the All-Star, replacing in Gonzalez, should give you some hope that next season you're going to have some returning production that's going to be ready to hit the ground running, because they're going to need to.
Right, and you know it's unfortunate that here at the end of April, start of May, that you're having to rely on so many of your young guys. But for a team that is in conference play, you're 3-18. I mean, you're not really playing for postseason. I mean, postseason's not really in the picture, I don't think.
It is technically still in the picture, but everything has got to go right.
Exactly.
I mean, not only do you have to win all the rest of your games, but you need certain teams to lose other games so that you can make it. It's technically not going to happen. Technically could still happen, but it's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, and so to my point is... Yeah. At this time, you get to rely on your young guys. You get to play your young guys, and you have to look at it that way if you're Butch Thompson, if you're the Auburn fan base. It's like, okay, let's see what we got. Let's see what's there. Let's see what the future holds for this team, and you're hoping that this is beneficial next season at this point.
Yeah, I mean, and kind of like looking at the class breakdowns and stuff. Yeah, Cale Strickland's a true freshman behind the plate. Carter Wright's an upperclassman ahead of him who should be back. Eric Guevara was a true freshman this year out of Panama. He's the one who tore his ACL in the fall. And came back in like 5 months.
You know, which is absurd.
Yes. Cade Bellew, true freshman outfielder from here in Auburn, has looked really good. Cam Tilley, the right-handed pitcher, has been one of the more impressive pitchers for me on the staff simply because he's a true freaking freshman. He came into the SEC and was dominating with a splitter just right away. And like, it's just... You've gotten so many. Sam Robertson's gotten a little bit of playtime in the infield. Obviously, Chris Stanfield just being a sophomore. You need Ike Irish to be healthy and to come back. I do have to mention you do have the ability to transfer out, so you have to hope Ike Irish comes back. He is not draft eligible. I've confirmed he's not draft eligible, but he could still transfer if he wanted.
Do you have any expectation on that? I mean we don't have a whole lot of word on that, but if you had to give a guess as of this point.
Every offseason you have guys who are a risk to leave, and we had a couple prominent guys who were potentially leaving or had thought about leaving or discussed leaving, and we convinced them to stay. I don't know if it's as easy of a sell to convince a guy a second time to stay after the season you just had.
That's so what I was going to say. Yeah,
I wouldn't be surprised if you lose one or two guys. I don't have any specific names. People like they told me they're worried about him leaving, but I would expect one or two guys probably to transfer out simply because either they don't like the way the season went or they don't think going forward it's fixable. And yeah. I do. I do think it's fixable, but I just don't know if they will share that opinion or not.
Yeah, and you know, in a respectful way, you're not playing, right? It's not our futures, our careers that are kind of up in the air with this that we have to make a decision on.
I'm going to write these stories either way, and that's not a situation they're in, right?
Exactly.
They want to be in the stories, and they're not in the stories. Exactly. You don't have a limited amount of time to get in the stories.
Yep. Well, Auburn baseball, no midweek this week with it being finals over at the university, so they do have Ole Miss coming to town this weekend. Mm-hmm. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6 o'clock first pitch Friday, 7 o'clock first pitch Saturday, 3 o'clock first pitch on Sunday. For those of you that want to listen to it on the radio, of course, you can listen to Andy Burch and Brad Law over on the Auburn Sports Network on Wings 94.3 and WingsFM.com here locally in Auburn, Opelika. I mean, while, as we mentioned, SEC tournament is probably out, technically not, but let's just be realistic here. This is still a big opportunity for Auburn baseball to come out and do a little something, have the fans show up and show out for the second to last time at Plainsman Park this season, and it's always a fun time when Auburn and Ole Miss get together.
It absolutely is, and what's great here is the teams right in front of you on the road to Hoover are the ones you're playing. Ole Miss is tied for the final spot at 7-14 in the conference. Missouri, you play them later. They're right in front of you at 6-15. Alabama's right in front of Ole Miss and LSU at 9-12. So you can win some games here, and you can still make it in because the teams that you need to lose are the teams that you are playing. So that's in your control.
Couldn't ask for it any other way. He is Lindsey Crosby. He joined us all of hour number one. Plug it all one more time, man.
I'm on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. It's the hub for everything. The Atlanta Braves, BravesDay.com, the Auburn Tigers, AuburnDaily.com, and a million other places.
That's right. Lindsey, always a blast, brother. Appreciate you coming in.
Thank you for having me.
That's our baseball power hour in the books. We'll talk a little Auburn basketball. We got some transfer portal news we need to go over coming up in hour number two. And Double D, Daryl Dapperts will be with us at 3:15 on the phone lines. Until then, phone lines are open. 334-321-1390, hour number two, coming up.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goertz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Tuesday edition of the show. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, as we're just now getting underway here in the second hour, if you missed any of it, you can go and catch up with the podcast. You know where to find it, ESPNAU.com. You can find it there right after the show today. We had Lindsey Crosby with us in the first hour for our Tuesday. Look, I call it our baseball power hour. I don't know another name to come up with it for it, but that seems to kind of fit because that's what it is. It's a solid hour once a week of just pure baseball talk. So for those of you that are baseball fans, I hope you enjoy that. If baseball is not quite your thing, I totally understand. But if you missed any of it, you can go and listen to the podcast later today. We talked a lot of Braves, a lot of Major League Baseball, talked a little Auburn baseball as well, as the Tigers are off in the midweek. They will continue with Ole Miss this weekend at home over at Plainsman Park. So that was all in hour number one. Got our opening segment here of hour number two. Before we get to Daryl Daprich, he'll join us at 3:15. Lots of things to talk about on Auburn Athletics when it comes to football transfer portal, which officially closed today. Yes, the portal closed today. And so if you're not in it, you ain't getting in it, is basically what that means. Is it means if you're not in the transfer portal right now, you are not able to enter it anymore. And so doesn't mean there won't be news from the transfer portal, because there's still a ton of players in it. There just won't be any more entries to the football transfer portal. So we'll talk about that with Daryl, a little bit of basketball things to talk about with him as well, and plus whatever else we get into with Double D, Daryl Daprich. But until then, phone lines are open for I guess the next 8 or 10 minutes or so. So if you want to call in, I would love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. And there is some basketball news that I'd like to go over. As Auburn was looking for, Bruce Pearl and Auburn were looking for another forward, looking for somebody to kind of replay. You're still looking for your full rotation replacement of Jalen Williams. You feel good about Chaney Johnson, right? But you're kind of looking for somebody else to come in and compete for that job, start maybe in that job, or at least back up that job. There was a guy who was coming to visit who I think Auburn was going to be pretty excited about, that would have fit this system really, really well, who was planning on taking a visit and has since then, as of today, canceled that visit, and there is no more visit going to be had. RJ Godfrey, the Clemson power forward, is no longer scheduling or no longer taking his visit. It was supposed to start today, I believe, and that is no longer happening. 6'8", the forward out of Clemson, played all of their games in the last 2 years, and he had going really about 15 minutes per game or so, was shooting about 60% from the floor, and was a guy that I think you could rely on to be a good backup piece. He was somebody who I thought could come in, and I don't know if he was going to start. I really don't. And my initial thought is no, and maybe not even power forward, more maybe a small forward, if you will, because, again, I still believe that you could start Dylan Cardwell and Janiah Broome at the same time. I don't know if Bruce is going to do that, but I think you could, and I think you should. I called for that last year. But if you do, then you just need a backup there. If you don't and you start Janiah Broome at your center, then you start looking at, okay, where do you put Chaney Johnson? But this guy, RJ Godfrey, was going to come in and take a visit. He was considering Auburn, and now that is not happening anymore. But Auburn is hosting a point guard transfer, Duke Miles, today. He is a fifth year that's coming in with one more season of eligibility. Had 17.5 points per game, 3.5 assists. So that is something to keep an eye on as Auburn is looking to kind of fill out its guard position because, I mean, you did lose three to the transfer portal, so you're trying to replace that a little bit. You've brought in a couple. Right, you've brought in a couple, either high school or the transfer portal, but still just trying to figure out what your rotation's going to look like and what your starting five is going to be and if there's going to be any competition at those spots. Because you want a little bit of that. I mean, you're going to have a good idea of what your starting five is going to be, but you at least want it to be a little competitive. And I think that the high point guard Duke Miles could really come in and kind of push for that at the point guard spots. A guy that I think is very athletic, very physical, and has really, really good hands for a point guard, handling, right, with handles and kind of getting to the basket and getting around defenders and things like that. You want as much as you can get. And with Auburn losing what they did, you just got to replace that. You got to replace it. And I can't not tell you, and I'll continue to tell you, and I hope nothing but the best for this guy. But losing Trey Donaldson, that was tough. That was tough because Trey Donaldson's going to go and start in Michigan, I think. I think he's going to start up there. And Dusty May has been bringing in some serious talent up there in Ann Arbor. People kind of counting them out and discounting them. Watch out for Michigan, those of you that keep up with Big Ten basketball. Trey Donaldson's going to be a man up there. And I think he was going to be competing in your guard room. He apparently was not going to start, right, because he got the word and seems like he wanted to get out and go somewhere else, which is fine, which is absolutely fine. But you, of course, lost KD Johnson, you lost Aiden Holloway, and you've got to make up for that. But the huge announcements of Chad Baker-Mazzara coming back, Dylan Cardwell coming back, Jani Broome coming back, Auburn is once again going to have one of the top rosters in the SEC. And Uncle T-Bone and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday, and Daryl and I are going to talk about this coming up in a few minutes, but you have to start doing something with that. And it's crazy to look around the Southeastern Conference. And look, I'll say this too, rosters are not done changing. The rosters you see across the 16 teams right now in the SEC are not the same ones you're going to see in November when the season begins. That's how it goes, man, because you're still working in the transfer portal. Look at what Kentucky and Arkansas are doing right now. Look at what Alabama's doing right now. You still have, I mean, Auburn is still active in the portal. So you can look at them right now and start to rank them and still have a pretty good idea, but they're still changing. And that's okay. That's the world we're in. And that's good for Auburn, and it could be bad for Auburn in terms of what other teams are doing. But I still firmly believe, and I've talked about this with Doug, I firmly believe that Auburn and Alabama will have two of the best rosters in the SEC at opening tip-off of day one of the college basketball season. That's just where we are. Now, will they be the best teams next year? I guess we'll find out. They should be. They should be two of the best. They should be two of the top five without a doubt. Given everything that's going on around the conference, the question marks of Kentucky, Arkansas, two of the teams that have been the best and competing to be the best for a while in this league. What happens with Texas, who, in case you forgot, is a really good team, a really good program with a really good head coach? Does Ole Miss come out of nowhere with Chris Beard again and try to have a competitive team? I don't know. Florida. You know how I feel about him. I love that team. I love that coach. They could continue to climb the ranks in the SEC, which is why in this transfer portal era, you cannot be complacent. You cannot be totally okay with who you have. If you have an opportunity to go after somebody and make your team better, you have to do it. which is something that Uncle T-Bone and I talked about yesterday with the loyalty to your players. Loyalty in today's world, in college sports, it gets you beat. And that's sad, but it's true. Just because you're loyal to a guy that's been with you for 2 or 3 years and he's been good enough to start on your team for the past 2 or 3 years, but all of a sudden, there's another guy that enters the portal who just happens to be interested in Auburn. You can't turn him down because you have your guy. That's a losing recipe. If you have a chance to get somebody, bring him in. And you can't not bring somebody in because you don't want to ruffle any feathers. You don't want to upset anybody. There's a motto in sales. It's called ask for forgiveness, not permission. And I think if you're a coach, you almost have to do that. You almost just have to go out and get them if you can and then explain yourself later, right? Make the sale now, ask questions later type of thing. I think that's where you are if you're a head coach. And I'm not saying that's what Bruce Pearl in particular is doing, but I think there are coaches that are doing that. There's no doubt about it. And that's the wild era we're in the transfer portal, man. It is unbelievable to watch. Auburn hosting Duke Miles right now. RJ Godfrey canceled his visit, which is typically not a great sign. So I wouldn't hold your hats on that one. And I wouldn't expect a whole lot from that moving forward from the Clemson transfer. We'll take our first break here in hour number one, a little bit earlier than usual because Double D Daryl Dapperich will join us when we come back. We'll talk about this exact thing, a little bit of basketball, so football, baseball, plus whatever else we can get into with Daryl. He'll join us on the phone lines coming up next here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
It's one of my favorite times of the week. It is Tuesday at 3:15, which means Double D, Daryl Dapperich, joining us on the phone lines. He's with me every Tuesday at this time. Daryl, happy Tuesday, brother. Hope all is well for you.
Everything is good, my friend. Happy Tuesday to you as well. Been looking forward to this all week so we can talk a little Auburn sports.
Yeah, well, almost happy May. I mean, tomorrow's May 1st, my friend.
Unbelievable. I mean, and it starts to slow down, obviously. Transfer portal today, that's it. That's the deadline to jump in the portal. Spring practice over. It really gets a little bit slow, you know, in May and June. And then SEC Media Days cranks it back up. So I'm assuming you'll be in Dallas for that.
Yep, that's the plan. That is the plan to be in
Dallas.
We'll
be there, too. So we'll get to hang out, break bread, and drink ginger ale.
Are you guys? Yeah, that's right. That's right. Hey, are you guys going to be going for the whole week or just the Auburn day?
The whole week.
Yes. I mean, it's
Dallas. We're actually flying, and it's funny. I'm going to a concert on Saturday night because I'm an old. I'm going to see Def Leppard and Journey in Atlanta.
Oh, nice.
On Saturday, so I'm just going to stay the night, and we're going to fly out of Atlanta. Zachariah will come by and pick me up, and we'll head to Dallas. So.
Man.
It'll be a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot going on out there when we're going to be out there, man. All-star game, baseball all-star game, home run derby. It's going to be lit, like the kids like to say.
That is what the kids say, and they say you're one of them, Daryl. So you fit right in.
That ship has sailed, my.
Well, man, I'm excited for that, and it'll be here before we know it. I mean, July is right around the corner. So, and our SEC Media Days coverage here at ESPN 106.7 is top-notch. So be sure that you guys are hanging around for that. We're going to get to some football conversation later on in our interview here, Daryl. But I want to start with some Auburn basketball because the transfer portal is continuing to rock for Auburn. And the plan was for them to host two guys today.
Right.
But that seems to not be the case anymore. Seems like they've been down to one thanks to RJ Godfrey from Clemson backing out.
So, you know, it was well known, and I did an article for it on Auburn Daily, that Auburn, after they completed the Pegues and Broom coming back, that really they had two more spots to fill. Now, originally, I was told from some pretty good sources that they were going to go the Chad Baker-Mazzara route and go after a point guard that was like a JUCO guy. And, you know, Auburn actually has had a better option and has brought in Duke Miles. He's a point guard, junior point guard from High Point, University is in town right now. A Montgomery, Alabama kid, played at Troy. I actually called a couple of his basketball games.
Okay.
On the radio. Just a pure scorer as a point guard, averaged about 18 points a game for High Point, but seems to have the, I don't know, awareness, or seems to have the acceptance that he's going to come in and learn under or play behind Pegues. But Auburn's point guards, if you go back to the Jared Harper, Jalen McCormick duo, you can get significant minutes. You don't have to wear him out. He can still get 15 to 18 minutes a game. And then the really key thing, Jacob, is that he can come back next year and be the perceived starter.
Right.
So I like him a lot. That's a better option than maybe getting an unproven JUCO kid, because at least this kid has played mid-major basketball. The other was R.J. Godfrey, and he was a Clemson power forward, about 6'8", from Georgia, but he was a Clemson university player. Came off the bench for Clemson, was like their sixth man. So here's the deal. Does he want to come to Auburn and back up Chaney Johnson? Or does Auburn bring somebody in to start over Chaney Johnson, let Chaney Johnson compete for the... So it seems like he canceled his visit. The words I'm getting is that Georgia has become a major player, where he would have the opportunity to start at Georgia, and the NIL money would reflect as such. Mm. Can't blame the kid. Do you want to come to Auburn and be a backup, or do you want to go to Georgia and start?
Well, typically,
and his dad played at Georgia too.
So. Oh, okay. I see. I didn't know that, yeah. And I didn't mean to cut you off. But what I was going to say was, typically, when somebody's transferring from a Power Six school as a bench player, they're not really looking to jump to another Power Six school and be a bench player, right?
Amen. I mean, and that's why I was shocked. So unless Bruce Pearl told him, "No, you're not going to be a star. I'm not going to guarantee you a starting spot or pencil you in as the." But I'll allow you to compete with Chaney Johnson for the starting job. That could be what they were selling. And then Georgia swoops in and says, no, you can start here, and here's the NIL money to reflect that. It's a no-brainer. So now Auburn needs to go to Plan B, and I'm trying to dig and find some names of some fours or some fives. Now, does Auburn have to pursue a four, or can they now look at a five that you could slot right in and start a guy that's a stud, that's a starter, start him at the five and slide Broom to the four? That may alter or change the perception of who they pursue now.
Could they go after a potential backup five and start Dylan Cardwell at that spot?
You could, and then you could have Broom be the starter at four and Chaney Johnson be the backup at four. Yes, so that's the versatility. Go get a backup five if you feel confident enough that Cardwell can stay on the floor for a significant number of minutes because of foul trouble. Look, I love the kid. He is one of the most important pieces of Auburn's basketball team. But what he needs to show the fan base and the coaching staff is, can he play consistent minutes and stay on the floor for 20 to 25 minutes a game if you're a starting five and not getting foul trouble?
Mm-hmm.
It's not even production. So my whole basis of that is projecting stats out. So if Dylan Cardwell played 10 minutes a game for Auburn and averaged 6 points and four rebounds, we'll project that out if he stays on the floor for 20 minutes. Key is staying on the floor for 20 minutes, staying out of foul trouble, and being able to sustain yourself on the floor. But if he can't, get a legitimate backup five that can give you double figures in points too, and then he can come in and play 20 minutes if Cardwell can't. It's a nice problem to have. They have some versatility. I just don't have enough inside information as to what they're planning on doing with Broom.
Yeah, and that's obviously what the offense is going to be built around when it comes to the four and five spot down low for Auburn. I mean, that's why you bring somebody like Jani Broom back. That's why you stroke that NIL check to make sure he comes back, because, I mean, he could have gone and tested those waters one more time and seen what he could have done at the next level. But now that he comes back, who is going to be what most people believe is the preseason SEC player of the year, you obviously want to run things through him, and you now are going to have some guards that can help you do that. When it comes to R.J. Godfrey, who, again, is no longer visiting Auburn, and that's probably not going to happen with him coming to Auburn, I'm a little upset about it, and hopefully there's other guys in the works, and I think there are, because something I was talking about before you came on, I like the competition aspect of it, Daryl. I like bringing these guys in and not just saying, okay, it's May 1st, we know our starting five, we'll see you in November.
Well, what you can do with the competition aspect is you can go for a combined type production scenario. So let's say Chaney Johnson wins the job and he increases his points and rebounds production from the 6 points, four boards he got last year and increases it to 10 and 8 or 10 and 6, right? Well, then if you pair him with another four, another power forward that gives you 6 or 7 points a game and 2 or 3 boards, you're getting 18 points and 8, 9 rebounds production from the power forward position. Who cares how you get there? Who cares if it takes two dudes to do it?
Yeah.
You're getting it from that position. And that's, you know, Jalen Williams and him combined for that. They were very successful, and especially when Jay Will got hurt that one game or two games, and Chaney Johnson really upped his game. Do I feel like Chaney Johnson could take off next year and be a double-figure scorer? Absolutely. I do. I think another year under his belt. But if he doesn't, and if he lingers around 8 or 9 points a game, 3 or 4 rebounds, then you better get somebody in there that can almost match that production so that it's a combined type efficiency standpoint. I think Auburn can do that. Now, I don't know where they'll go. I don't know if they'll go to a mid-major scenario now instead of a Power Five, because what you said was so on point. You can convince a mid-major kid to leave their school and maybe be a backup, to go to a Power Five, to go to a SEC school. You can convince them because they're playing up in the spotlight in a lot more elite league.
Mm-hmm.
So a kid that's maybe averaging 10 points a game at a mid-major, and you say, hey, look, you're going to come and maybe back up Chaney Johnson or maybe come back and compete. You can sell him that more than you can another kid from a Power Five school. It's just a lot easier because you're playing a higher level of basketball.
Right. And now, like you said, too, with NIL starting to creep in and be a huge recruiting tool for all of these guys. I mean, look, Auburn's looking for depth at this point, maybe a starter, but more likely depth than anything. And so they don't have to come off as much NIL money as somebody like a Georgia and Mike White, which is not a bad situation, I don't think. But they're trying to go get some starters.
They're trying to get a starter.
Exactly.
Right. That's the difference. Now, if a starter fell in Auburn's lap that was a significant upgrade at the four position, you take it. If you get a guy that's from a Power Five school that averaged 15 points, 10 rebounds a game somewhere, and he wants to come to Auburn, you do it. And you just tell Chaney, we're going to compete. You know, I have faith in you too. Let's get after it. Let's split minutes. Let's each play, you know, 18 minutes apiece and see what happens. It's a nice luxury to have. I don't know if that's the route they'll go. I don't know if they're falling from trees like that. I don't blame the Godfrey kid at all. If you leave somewhere to become a starter, why do you want to, especially from a Power Five, why do you want to go somewhere and just be a backup again? So, you know, that one doesn't shock me. The Duke Miles scenario, a lot better fit, makes more sense.
Yo, I'm with you on that 100%. I'm glad you said it that way, because that's what I was talking about before you got on was, man, in any team, in any situation nowadays in the transfer portal, I don't care if you've got a first-round number one overall pick standing there. If you have a chance to go get somebody, you go get them. If you have a chance to get better or upgrade, you take the chance and you worry about the loyalty side of it later on, which I know is different than what it used to be, but that's just the world that we're living in with the transfer portal. We're talking with Daryl Dapprich here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. We're going to talk some Auburn football news when we come back. Transfer portal that you could still see even though it closes today, and plus some of the additions that Auburn has already made. There's been some word and some talk about them. We'll have some more of that when we come back with Daryl Dapprich here on ESPN Radio after this.
With Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. We're joined by Daryl Dapprich on the phone lines. Man, tell the people where they can find you, listen to you, read you now. You're on the internet now, too, Double D. You're doing everything, my man.
Yeah, Monday morning, 710 WANI with our good friend Ben Taylor. Obviously with you, 315 to 345 on the line Tuesday afternoon. And then Wednesdays and Fridays, wherever you get your podcast, Locked on Auburn with Zach Blackerby. And then I've been doing some occasional writing for auburndaily.com. If it's a basketball reconstruction roster reset, I've been doing that. I did some A-Day notes, a look back. You know, we'll be. I think once the roster gets set and once Auburn fills the backup point guard in the four or five position, I'll do another synopsis of what Auburn has from a roster standpoint, and then we can look at some things. You know, obviously I'll be writing some things out coming out of SEC Media Day. So should be a lot of fun. Keeps me busy.
That's right. Well, y'all check it out wherever you get your podcast for Locked on Auburn. Check him out at Auburn Daily. And, of course, we appreciate him each and every week joining us here on ESPN Radio. Let's go to some football where the portal closed today. Today's the last day, right, of the college football transfer portal. After this, if you're not in it, you're not getting in it, is what I said earlier. And doesn't mean there won't be news, doesn't mean there won't be things happening, because there's still an abundance of players in there. And I think Auburn is still searching around. They're still kind of dipping their toe in there a little bit, but they've made some really good additions so far this offseason, Daryl.
Really addressed the defensive line front with Rakes and obviously the edge rusher Crawford, and then Bleedy, who's a really good three technique, and then of course you get KLS Keandre Lambert Smith, and on that, you know, there was a Locked on Auburn episode last week. I wasn't on the show Friday; I was sick, and Zach interviewed another Zach who hosts Locked on Nittany Lions, and he was less than complimentary of Keandre Lambert Smith, and it came across to some as, be honest with you, sour grapes, a little jilted lover type scenario. So I have some connections in Pittsburgh, you know, being from Pittsburgh, and reached out to a beat writer that has covered Penn State for quite a long time for various news organizations. He's written for a lot of different papers, and he hosts his own call-in show from Altoona. His name's Corey Geiger. So I reached out to him a little while ago, and we did a real nice over-the-phone interview for about a half hour, and I asked about four or five pointed questions that I'll be sharing with the viewers and listeners of Locked on Auburn tomorrow. And I hate to tease, but, you know, me and Zach haven't recorded yet. So, but there's some interesting nuggets there, some interesting perspective, maybe just a little different set of eyes and view of what, you know, Lambert Smith can bring to the Auburn receiving room.
Well, when he committed, I mean, Auburn fans were excited. Auburn people, media like us, were excited because of his experience, because of his skill set, because of what he could bring to this young but raw wide receiver room. And the comments that he made talking about Lambert Smith from Penn State when he committed was he was ready to take on that leadership role. And that's what a lot of Auburn fans were wanting him to be, possibly come in and be an early number one until guys like Cam Coleman and Perry Thompson get their feet underneath them. But, yeah, some of the Penn State folks kind of pushed back on that.
There are specific reasons, and I'll just say this. I mean, there are reasons why that'll be revealed tomorrow that he dropped off, his production dropped off. That was one of the major things, is why the last four games that he followed. Well, there's a valid reason for that. There's a reason why, you know, he kind of was perceived as a number one and then wasn't. As far as expectations, a lot of it will make sense. The problem is that Auburn doesn't need him to be a number one.
Bingo.
Okay, so that's the false narrative, is that Auburn needs somebody that can be a solid number two opposite of Cam Coleman. And who's to say the kid can't be a number one? I don't want to put chains and shackles on him. But even if he's not, you got Coleman on one side, you got Perry Thompson, you got Cam Brown. So what you're looking for is maybe a legitimate number two that could, you know, kind of help out the youngsters in the receiving room. And I'll say this, I watched the NFL draft. I watched every single moment of it because I'm an idiot. I'm a dork. I watched it, and Penn State had a center that was picked in the third or fourth round. Every freaking highlight they showed of the Penn State center pass blocking was Drew Aehler, the quarterback for Penn State, throwing it to Lambert Smith. I'm like, is this a highlight reel for Lambert Smith, or is this a highlight reel for the center? I'm talking about touchdown after touchdown after out route to the sideline, big play. It was always number one for Penn State making the catch. I thought that was very interesting. And, again, it was supposed to be focusing on the center. So it remains to be seen. I think that, you know, there's some expectations there. We'll see. But I don't feel like he has to be or come in with the pressure of you need to be a number one. Now, he was a number one rated receiver in the portal. And with that comes some very lofty expectations. But just because you're the number one receiver rated in the portal doesn't mean you're a number one potential wide receiver. I mean, people need to differentiate the two, right? I mean, Jay Fair was ranked pretty high in the portal, I guess, as a portal receiver. Mm-hmm. Well, we know that at Auburn he was receiver number three or four, and now he's at USC, and some others think that Lincoln Riley is going to flip a switch and he's going to – we'll see. I hope he does. But it's all about – perception, and it's all about what you need as a receiver room. And I think he's going to fit in wonderfully here. And I think if people start doubling Cam Coleman, this kid's going to eat. If people start focusing on Perry Thompson or Robert Lewis in the slot, this kid's going to eat. So we'll see. But I think I'm very excited about the get that he is for Auburn. It was a must have. And, you know, kudos to Auburn for making the pull.
I can't remember if I was talking to you about this last week or if I was just talking on the show in general, but I said sort of my expectation for Lambert Smith is I don't need him to be or want him to be the number one receiver day one in the opener and then also in November in the Iron Bowl. Like, I don't think that's what Auburn's expecting him to be either, but you can bring him in those first three or four kind of cupcake games getting into SEC play. And since he is going to be one of the most experienced guys in the room, use him early until, yeah, some of the young puppies get up and going and then let him loose.
Well, it's all about matchups. And if people start to shade that side of the field because Cam Coleman's living up to the hype and they start shading a safety over there, and they leave Lambert Smith one-on-one, I don't care what the Penn State locked-on Nittany Lions dude said, he'll eat. He'll get some touchdowns. He will beat people one-on-one. The difference was, in my opinion, when people started recognizing he was the number one receiver and started taking him away. And when they started taking him away, the numbers went down.
Mm-hmm.
And Penn State started throwing to other options and throwing away from him because he was getting taken away from the team's best corners. No matter what anybody says or tries to spin or whatever, I went back and watched film, and the number one cornerback, whether it was Iowa's, the kid that just went in the second round of the Eagles for Iowa, the Cooper kid, is it DeJohn Cooper? I don't know. Some other guys, Michigan, the kid that went from Michigan that went to the Washington Commanders in the slot, if they lined up him in the slot, where he played some slot, that kid was on him. So there's something to be said about putting your best DBs on a receiver. If people choose to do that, Cam Coleman's going to be a freshman All-American. If people choose to put their best DB on Cam Coleman, Lambert Smith's going to have some big games. And who are you going to line up in the slot with Robert Lewis? Oh, and by the way, try to cover Fairweather now with a linebacker.
Boom. Love it.
So that's why it's so important.
Yep.
To have those type of receivers, Perry Thompson line. You go four wide and put Fairweather at the tight end position and run him up the seam and let the safeties and the corners trail and follow all the elite receivers and then put some linebacker on Rivaldo Fairweather? That's a Mackey Award candidate. I'm just telling you. But Auburn couldn't do that last year because they didn't respect the receivers. They didn't respect outside. They didn't respect slot. I mean, Auburn had to move Fairweather outside and throw him fade routes.
Oh.
I mean, they did.
I
mean,
I know.
Cal game, he wins.
I know. I know.
The play, here's the thing. It's going to happen, and when it does, you better freaking text me. So, at some point during the season, there is going to be a play where Peyton Thorne is going to fake the handoff to a running back, and he's going to do this little throwback to the opposite side of the field, and it's going to be Lewis walking into the end zone, or Thompson walking into the end zone, or Lambert Smith. When last year when they ran that play against Arkansas, it was Fairweather. Remember that, where he threw it to him? He threw across the grain. It's like he ran one way, faked the handoff, threw it back to the other side, and it was Fairweather wide open on a little boot pass, and he walked in the end zone. You wait. It's going to happen to a receiver.
Right,
that's how. You write it down. And then you better text me and say, there it is, Zach. Just like the Keontae Scott punt return I called.
Yep.
There it is.
That's right. That's right.
Against Arkansas. So those type of things, I'm really excited about Jeremiah Cobb. I cannot bottle my enthusiasm and optimism for this kid. I really think he is going to have a special year and become a very, very good running back in the SEC. It's going to be hard to keep him off the field and not give him enough carries.
Yeah, you were on him last year in the press box.
I love him. I've seen him live in high school. He's a different kid with a different speed. But to go back to the defensive, you know, Rakes and Bleedy and Crawford on the outside to be a bookend with McLeod and Falk, and now you got Gage Keys and Jason Jones and Trill Carter, you've got depth now. You've got depth. You've got experience. You got two deeps that can rotate bodies in and out. Man, this defense has a chance, especially with the secondary. And I still think Auburn gets one more corner in the portal, Jacob. I really do. I think they'll target a defensive back.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think they're just going to be a really special group, and it just gets more and more exciting as, yes, this is starting to get into talking season, but that's what this is about, and it's about looking at
the... Am I booging? I'm trying not to boog. I'm trying not to boog too much.
Some would say you
are. I don't want to be Zach and Charlie Five and boog, but, you know, they made a great comment to talk about real quick. Is this the best Auburn roster? They threw that out there since Auburn's had in 2017 on paper.
I think so, yeah.
I think so, too.
I think that's fair.
The quarterback position could be the one caveat because I was really high on Stidham, and I felt like Stidham was completely underused in 2018, completely underused. I really love – Jarrett Stidham could have went down as one of the greatest quarterbacks to play at Auburn. He really could have, had he been utilized in the right offense. So other than that, the running back room, I mean, you had Kerryon, you know, but the running back room looks deep. I like our offensive line, the receiving room. You had, you know, different guys in 17. Then, you know, you had a Darius Slayton and some of those guys. But Craig Meyer, I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of comparisons. It's going to be a fun year. And I really am trying not to get overhyped and oversell and sunshine pump.
Nah.
But this roster reconstruction feels like it was addressed. And I still feel like it's going to get added to and be a little bit better. And the schedule lines up,
I think.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great year.
Well,
I really do.
It's refreshing.
There's going to be an improvement. Is it plus two? Is it plus three? My prediction is, people ask me, with the addition of these defensive linemen and the addition of KLS, have you changed the win projection for Auburn? And I said plus 1.5 at least. I had Auburn going, you know, 8-4, maybe 7-5. Now I think they can win 9 or 10.
I think
9 regular season, win the bowl game to get to 10. It's not out of the ordinary. It's not out of the question.
I like it a lot. Well, Darryl, one more thing before we let you get out of here. Darryl Dappert's joining us here on ESPN 106.7. 5 guys taken in the NFL draft. You said you had been keeping up with that, as a lot of us have been and were over the past weekend. Nehemiah Pritchett to Seattle, Jalen Simpson to Indy, DJ James going to Seattle as well, the new Auburn North, Justin Rogers going to Dallas, and Marcus Harris going to Houston. Man, 5 defensive guys going to the NFL once again for Auburn.
Late rounders, and again, I get all that people are like, how did Auburn win 6 games without any talent that wasn't drafted till the 5th round? Well, then you see you got 5 guys going quickly. Ole Miss won 11 games. How did they win 11 games with only 2 dudes getting drafted? It's what I want to know.
Right.
You know, let's flip the switch on that. So, yeah, defensive guys. Auburn will be back and will be where they need to be in the national conversation and the national narrative when they start getting offensive players drafted in the first 3 rounds. When that happens, Auburn will be where they need to be as a football program. And next year, I could see a guy like Percy Lewis getting drafted early, Keontae Scott, perhaps Jalen McLeod. Still a little bit lacking on the offense. We'll see if maybe a receiver emerges to get taken in the first three rounds.
God, but wouldn't that be a miracle? Auburn
needs that to happen. Now, Fairweather could go early. He's the kind of guy, like I talked about, with the receivers being the way it's going to be with Auburn, he could get a ton of statistics and be one of the first tight ends taken off the board, even go as high as the second or third round.
Mm.
So that's another dude. If he gets the kind of isolation and the one-on-one matchups that may come with having good receivers.
I like it. I like it. And I'm with you. I think Auburn's got to get back. And I've been saying that Auburn has got to get back to putting offensive guys in the league. And I think you're going in the right direction to do that. We'll see how that goes over the next few years. Daryl Dapperich with us every single Tuesday here on the show. Man, it's always a blast. This is one of my favorite segments of the week. I appreciate you. Tell the people where they can find you one more time before we let you get out of here.
Monday mornings, WANI, 315, 345. Tuesdays on the line, Wednesdays and Fridays. Locked on Auburn.
Awesome. Daryl, thank you so much, brother. I appreciate you and your friendship, man. Have a fantastic week, okay?
You too, brother. Take care.
That's Daryl Dapperich with us on the phones every single Tuesday, 3:15, here on the line on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Tuesday edition of On the Line. Man, it's been a lot of fun around here. We always have a good time on Tuesdays. If you missed any of the show, you can go and listen to the podcast. Listen to it on your way home. Listen to it in the shower, in the bed. I don't care. I don't care where you listen to it. Just go and take a look. Take a peek, all right? Take a listen. You can listen to it today, tomorrow, whenever you like. You can find it on ESPNAU.com. That's our station website. Or you can just search On the Line wherever you get your podcast. We had Lindsey Crosby back in hour number one. He joined us for our Baseball Power Hour, our weekly segment on a weekly hour on baseball here in the spring and the summer. Lots of Braves talk, lots of Major League Baseball talk. We got some rules talks in there, umpire bashing, which is always fun in my world. So that was all in hour number one. Some Auburn baseball talk in there as well. And then we've had a little bit of basketball news to talk about that we got to today in the second hour. And then, as you just heard, Daryl Dapperich was with us as well. Double D, my man. Love talking to him. He's a great guy, great guest, even better person outside of the studio. So if you missed any of that from the show today, again, go and listen to the podcast, ESPNAU.com, and you can find it right after the show today. And, man, does Daryl not get you fired up for football season? Does Daryl not get you excited for Auburn football coming up in the fall? I mean, as he said, you've got the portal closing today. So at this point, there will not be any more after today. There will not be any more entries and people leaving from Auburn. So that's always exciting. And then you'll get some guys committing. As Daryl said, I kind of agree with him. I think there will be a couple of more additions as we go. But nothing super crazy, but I do think there will be one or two. And then you've got the month of May, you've got June, and then you've got SEC Media Days in July. And we fully plan on being there, ladies and gentlemen. We plan on being there in Dallas, Texas for SEC Media Days. And then at that point, it's on. I mean, it is on right then and there for college football season. Fall practice will start after that. Then you get into it. And so Daryl got us all fired up, got me fired up, talking about this roster, about this team, the potential of what they could do. I have to say this before we get out of here. Update for tomorrow. No On the Line tomorrow. All right, I will not be here. I am working. I'm not taking the day off, believe me. But there will be no show tomorrow between 2 and 4. I will be with my friend Christian Griffin. We will be on the road. We're going to be over in Grove Hill, Alabama, which is about 3 hours from here tomorrow. We are calling Lee Scott postseason baseball. Yes, the Warriors are in the state semifinals on the road at Clark Prep, which is, yes, 3 hours from here. And so that's where we will be tomorrow. We're going to be leaving Auburn about 11:30. And so no On the Line tomorrow. Be back on Thursday. We will have Brad Law Harbaugh from the Auburn Sports Network. We'll also have, we're going to have Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC. He joins us every Thursday as well. So that's coming up on Thursday. Uncle T-Bone will be back on Friday. No show tomorrow, okay? So keep that in mind. So when you hear the normal ESPN programming, don't flip out. I didn't go anywhere. Well, I did, but I'll be back on Thursday. So keep that in mind. The drive staying the same. Max Roundtable staying the same. Just know me tomorrow. I'll be back on Thursday here in the studio. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network and also Chris Gordy, host of Locked On SEC. If you missed any of the show, go to ESPNAU.com. You can find the podcast version there. It'll be posted right after the show here in the next couple of minutes. I'll be back on Thursday, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. I'm Jacob Goetz. Until then, stay safe. I'll talk to you later.